We are back. It is another episode of Inside Boxing Live. I am Dan Canobio. He is not former, current, not current either, just forever world champion. Chris Algieri just made you a current boxer. This episode is brought to you by PPV.com, as is every episode, our presenting sponsor, the worldwide leader in live events, whether it's boxing or AEW wrestling. We got you covered. No subscriptions. Stream it to your phone. Stream it to your big screen TV. One of the best streams, the best stream that you can get. I remember Chris was able to live stream a fight while he was flying to Salt Lake City to become a Mormon. How are you, Chris?
That is definitely not true. I was flying to Portugal on the rare vacation that Chris Algieri ever gets to take.
Slightly off there by Dan.
Slightly off. Yeah, yeah. Mormonism. I mean, not knocking anybody's religion, but...
I'll tell you what. I went to Broadway play this weekend. I saw Book of Mormon for the first time in my life.
There you go. There you go.
Fresh on the brain.
Did you enjoy it?
Oh, it was amazing. It was an amazing play. Hilarious. First time at a Broadway play. You know, as somewhat of a performer, you're a performer, Chris. You perform inside that ring, and now you perform on this podcast and for ProBox. You know, I perform out there with my mini mic and calling fights. Not as much as these guys and gals do, but I was blown away by, like, the production and, like, them not missing a beat. Every song, lyric, every line, seamless. Just in super impressive.
Dude, it's Broadway. That's like the top of the top. That is the heavyweight championship of the world. You know, that's what it is. That's the best of the best. Just to go back on something you said, I am not a current fighter. This guy's making it seem like I'm
yes,
making
you are. Comeback. People Misfits? Are
like, what? No, I'm not a current
Darren
fighter.
Till's looking for a fight?
I'm not fighting nobody. Although I do like to train. I was just seeing I'm a little sweaty. It's a little hot here. I went for my morning 10-miler, which I haven't done in quite some time. That was a bad idea.
Same.
Still way too hot here. But you're not going to guess who I ran into there, Dan.
Donald Trump.
You think Donald Trump's out there running in the heat?
He needs to run a little bit. He's
good try. Good try. He is a South Florida guy, but he's a West
Manny Pacquiao.
Good guess as well. He likes to run, but he's a West Coast guy, California guy. Mickey Rourke, another West Coast guy, but very possibly could see that guy. No, it was Triple G, Gennady Golovkin, the man, the myth, the legend. I was running this morning, and I started my run with my buddy Luke, who's my running partner for the past 20 years. And we pass Triple G, and he's running, and I go...
How quick did you notice it was him?
Pretty quick. But my friend Luke was closer to him, so they kind of blocked him. But I saw him, and then I went to my buddy Luke. I'm like, hey, that was Triple G, and he goes, oh, dude, he's like, I saw him the other day. I thought that was him. I really thought that was him. He's like, that was him. I'm like, yeah, absolutely, that's him. Then on the way back from our run, now fast forward 45 minutes later, 10-mile run takes a long time. 45 minutes later, we cross paths again, and I wave him down. I'm like, Triple G, and he's like, he kind of had made a face like, ah, shit. You know,
and then he
recognized it was me, and I was like, "It's me, Chris Ledger." He's like, "Oh, of course, oh, damn." We chatted for a little bit. We were talking about West Coast living versus Boca living, and his family. And I said he looked good. He said, "No. Yeah, he does look good. He actually looks like he's in shape." And he told me I look good, but no, I'm always in shape.
You're always in shape. Triple G, he did get a little like, you know, he was enjoying retirement.
Yeah, there were some videos that came out where he was like coaching guys where he looked big, but no, he looks in much, much better shape. He looks like, I don't know if he's making a comeback. I don't know. We didn't discuss any of that. We kept it to the niceties of crossing paths for a few moments while it was hot, but he's still getting it in, Triple G.
That's awesome. You think he's looking at the state of middleweight and was like, Janibek? Janibek looked pretty good this weekend. Almost took a guy's head off.
Yeah. I mean, Triple G back at 60,
68,
43 now.
His last fight was at the third Canelo fight, which I don't ever want to remember, was at 68, right?
Yeah, but that was because of Canelo and because of the belt. So it was not because of Triple G. Triple G easily could probably
career middleweight. It was almost like people use that against him at certain points. Oh, this guy never changed divisions. He was only fought at middleweight.
It's so ridiculous that this day and age that's a negative. You know, Marvin Hagler didn't change any weight classes. Come on.
And he's the Marvin Hagler of our generation, Triple G.
Yes.
That's awesome. Yeah. And also now he's doing a great job with the Olympic. He pretty much revived or saved Olympic boxing for 2028 in LA.
Yep. That's awesome.
You know, that's great, that shows you care.
He's a great ambassador to the sport. and on so many different levels. So it's great that he's still giving back. It's great that he's still getting his runs in. It's great that he's down here in South Florida where all the cool guys are. One day we'll get you down here, Dan.
Well, here's the difference between me and you. You saw him the first time. I would have chased him down the first time.
Yeah, no, I was.
Like, I wouldn't have left it to chance. You did end up seeing him again, which is pretty cool. It's a cool, like, pro athlete move. Like, if I see him, I'll see him. I would have chased him down and maybe interviewed him, and he would have hated every minute of it.
And this is why you are media and why fighters want to punch you in the face.
Fake media.
I didn't even ask him for a picture. Next time I will. Next time I'll grab a shot.
Yeah, you got to get a picture. That would do cool. That would do well on social media. I am wearing my HBO boxing hoodie, speaking of Triple G.
That's cool.
Found it in the closet.
Mainstay.
He was HBO. Yeah, so let's get into it. It was a fun weekend of fights. It wasn't the greatest slate. There were a lot of fights. It was around the clock. It started at almost 11 a.m. on the East Coast with that Janabek card that featured him almost taking a guy's head off. We saw Jalilov on that card, who did not impress. We saw Richard Torres, speaking of heavyweights, later on the night, who kind of impressed. Abdullah Mason did a job. Who else? And then Tim Tszyu. We'll start there. Let's start with Tim Tszyu. Tim Tszyu scores a fourth round TKO over Joey Spencer, who offered absolutely nothing. Tim needed this. This is exactly what he needed, a confidence booster. He said after the fight that I could not afford three straight losses. He said he was feeling the pressure heading in. Certainly didn't look like it in the ring. He came out cautious for the first couple of rounds. And then like a switch, he was just like, yeah, I could probably take this guy out in the first round if I really wanted to. And just let his hands go like we've seen in the past with Tim Tszyu. But right away, like, is Tim Tszyu back? Like, can we see Tim Tszyu in big fights? He was a big crowd. He's got the, you know, the country behind him a lot more than Kambosos does. Like, I'm kind of thinking like Tim Tszyu's going to, they're just going to throw caution to the wind and put him in some big fights now.
I agree. In terms of getting right back in the big fights, yes, he is back. In terms of, is he back actually mentally, physically ready to perform at his best? We don't know. That's that. That fight did not give us a lot of answers. You know, like you said, Spencer did not put up a whole lot that really could show us anything. He didn't even really test. He didn't test it at all. We didn't test the chin.
Did he land a punch? Oh, he landed a few. He landed a few.
But yeah, like you said, it was like Tszyu was being cautious early, which could tell you that maybe, yeah, he did have some residual effects from those two losses. But then he touched Spencer with a body shot, and he saw him react, and he's like, all right, let me stop playing with my food, get this guy out of here, and then move on. And you know, yeah, I mean, is he back getting into big fights? Yeah, but this has all been the path to Keith Thurman. I mean, Keith Thurman was on the telecast. Like there's way too many. Yeah, well, I don't know if he was on the live. I know that he was commentating for something somewhere down there.
Oh. Well, he did put out a video afterwards, one of the blurriest camera videos I've ever seen. Looked like he was at the beach, could have been at his home, and I think he lives in like Clearwater or like that area. Anyway, keep going.
Oh no, I thought that I thought
I know Porter was there.
He was actually there. Sean was there.
Sean is like the Howard Cosell of Australian boxing. That guy is at every Australian fight. His frequent flyer miles must be.
Oh no, he
absurd.
Loves Australia. I've talked to him about that. He loves Australia.
And they love him. They keep hiring. Main event in Australia does a good job because they had some cool production elements. But yeah, Porter was there. They are clearly looking towards that Thurman fight.
Maybe I'm making a mistake. Maybe Thurman wasn't there. Maybe it was that video, like you said, right after where he talked about it. But
he looked like he was in Australia.
That's the next fight. So maybe that was it. I don't know. I don't know if that was actually the thing or not. But regardless, that is the fight that's going to be made next. There's way too many signs pointing that way. It makes too much sense.
Yeah. But just going back to the actual fight, and like we didn't learn much about Tszyu because Joey Spencer, I thought, was going to put up a little more of a fight. I mean, he looked the part. I mean, he had a great goatee. Guys, you know, these fighters with goatees, I think differently of them. I think, damn, this guy's going to come out tough. Look at that goatee. And
this is why me and you make such a good team, because you make those points that someone like me would never think about. But I think regular people probably do think like that. Like, oh, that goatee looks tough, man.
He looked tough. Listen, when I haven't heard from him in a while. I hadn't watched a lot of his fights.
He was talking tough, too. He was saying the right
talking
things.
Talking tough, looking tough. He was wearing like a black tux and like in one of the press conferences, got the goatee. Yep. I was like, man, this guy's going to give it a go. Yeah, this guy's we're going to see what Tim Tszyu is made of in this fight. He's going to push Tim Tszyu because Joey Spencer's it's almost like, damn, this is like a lottery ticket for Joey. You know, he beats Tszyu, who's a wounded gazelle, and then he gets himself into, you know, some bigger fights. But it proved to be that Joey Spencer is like a 140-pounder, maybe even a welterweight, fighting in way over his head. Didn't do anything in there. But I will say this about Tim Tszyu, what we did learn. he got through training camp. He got back into the ring. You know, we talked about what he was going to do next after the Bakram loss. And you suggested going underground. You suggested smaller fights. And I kind of agreed with you. But no, there is no smaller fights with Tim Tszyu.
No.
He's kind of like a throwback UFC type, Tim Tszyu. He's like the, you know, two losses don't mean much. He's just blood and guts. He's no nonsense. You know, I like it. And ultimately, what we did learn is that he got a win. And what we did learn is he's going to be in some big fights. Also, another thing is this weight class, there isn't any clear-cut, like, top guy in the weight class. It's just, you know, Bakram we don't know enough about. What he looked against Tszyu was just unreal. I would love to see him fight again so we can get some more stock on him and figure him out. I mean, you got Virgil Ortiz, who probably is the best skill-wise. Fundora, who has his warts, but also is super exciting. The Madrimov, the Boacheks, the Ramos Juniors, Conwell. I mean, it's a loaded division, but I think Tszyu is going to be right back into that mix. And I think that's what we learned the most, Chris. And you can attest to this. Coming back from a loss, you know, psychologically, I think this was big for Tim Tszyu. Maybe not for fans at home. Be like, whatever. Turn the TV off. Psychologically, this was a big lift for Zoo's career.
Yeah, I love it. I love the fact that he's going right back into a big fight. Like, you know, we mentioned the underground thing. He didn't need to do that. And because the reason for that is because Tim Tszyu is a star. He really is. He has a star quality to him that, you know, he says everything right in the interviews. He's got an entertaining style. He goes out there. He will take the risks. He'll take the fights. I love it. It's very similar to how I was in my career. I came off losses, went right back into big fights, went right back into main events. And that's the way it should be. I think we're moving more towards that way in recent years. But Tim Tszyu, as big as he is, for him to take that risk, I truly appreciate that. And I appreciate him for being that guy.
Yeah, I just wonder, like, I agree with you, but there's like a caveat. The caveat is Australians love boxing and they support their people to the bitter end. Like, Kambosos was still getting asses and seats for his last fight, despite losing
Anthony Mundane, like, you know, Green, you know, those guys were all, I mean, they always, even in, they were fighting nobodies at the end of their career and they were still selling out stadiums.
Yeah, so like Tszyu, yes, like, you know, the back to back losses, but he has the luxury of going back to Australia and, you know, filling it, like 10,000, 12,000 in that arena. And like, not every fighter can have that, especially not here in the States. Like, they don't have that. It just doesn't exist here. Like, there isn't that type of fan bases. But, you know, that's not a knock on Tszyu. He's just, you know, smart from his team, which has been knocked in the past for questionable taking fights and whatnot, Fundora and the Bakram fight. But yeah.
Yeah, I think it was DiBella. DiBella said that they were doing him no justice by having him take the Murtaz Aliyev fight right after the Fundora fight.
Right, I got a little pissed at that. That was the Monday morning quarterbacking.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of that going on. Like, Tszyu shouldn't have done that. But then again, like, we ask of our fighters, all we ask as fans.
For titles.
Right, and that's why Tszyu is going to get the benefit of the doubt. That's why I think Tszyu is a little bit different than a lot of these other guys out there. It's like, he's not like, speaking with him, and I'm sure you've spoken with him too, like, mm-hmm. He's no nonsense. Like, you're not getting, like, he doesn't have some image that he's trying to portray, doesn't have some image that he's trying to protect. He's not going out there like, I'm going to do some clout chasing stuff on social media. So, like, that's what his...
Super down-to-earth, genuine guy.
That's what he is, and that's his, mm-hmm. that's his personality, and that's his MO as a fighter. All you guys have your personalities and how you were marketed. Like, Tim Tszyu is marketed as a throwback, lineage, tough guy. I don't do, like, I like media, but I don't, you're not going to see me doing crazy shit on TikTok.
Yeah, no, he's not. Yeah, absolutely. And I appreciate that. It's a throwback because some of these, I send you videos sometimes. I'm like, Dan, I'm like, Marvin Hagler is rolling over in his grave when he sees these guys doing TikTok videos. Like, come on.
Not once a day, but maybe like twice a week, Chris will send me a DM in the IG and be like, cringe.
What the hell am I watching?
I'm not going to name names, but...
Marvin Hagler's rolling over in his grave. What happened to fighters being tough? God damn it. I'll turn into a grumpy old man.
Back when men were men. Back in my day. I get it. I mean, you got to promote yourself. You got to, you know, figure out a way to do that. And Tim doesn't care. But he's damn good. I do want to watch him fight again. But you're right.
Yep.
Thurman versus Tszyu is the fight to make right now. Just think about a year ago. A year ago, this fight was supposed to be made, and no one quite understood it because mm-hmm. Tszyu was a unified champion. Thurman hadn't fought in 2 or 3 years. It was his first fight at 154. He ultimately ends up getting hurt. Fundora steps in. You know the history there. But now a year later, with Zhu losing and coming back, Thurman stepping into the ring and being an overmatched Brock Jarvis. And with this division, a hot division, Thurman Zhu is competitive. It's fun. It makes sense. It's on the public's mind as boxing fans because we just watched them fight. Bring me this fight next. Like, I kind of have to see it now.
So I said this on a past pod that this fight makes more sense now. It's more intriguing now. But I'll say this. Even the first time around, when it first was announced, I was like, like all the points that you made about Thurman being coming off the couch, first time in the weight class, Zhu being who Zhu was. As the fight got closer, I was getting excited. I was like, you know what, though? I mean, Thurman's got a very tough style. He's an athletic guy. He's tricky with those looping shots. His lateral movement's great. Listen, there's a lot of things I can see that could give Zhu trouble. I want to see what Zhu can do with this guy. And then obviously the fight fell through. But now that it's back on, way more intriguing now because of where they are in terms of their time frame. The fact that Thurman's gotten back in the ring and he's gotten a win, even though it was super overmatched, much smaller guy. He still did what he was supposed to do with that guy. And yeah, man, bring it on. Zhu Thurman, I'm in.
In. I think a lot of fans are into it. You know, I social media isn't the end-all be-all, but you get a pretty good gauge of what fans want. Like fans right now, I have two fights that fans want to see right now is Plant versus Berlanga. And I wouldn't say want, but are like interested in Plant Berlanga, chatting about or like are open to, because we see a lot of fights thrown our way as fans and you're like, oh, I'm not excited about that. But a Thurman Zhu fight is so much more palatable and so much more marketable and so much it's more competitive. And it means something in this division, because I just said before, this is a division that is wide open. You got Fundora with the two belts and, you know, Zhu was tagging Fundora early on in that fight before one of the nastiest cuts you'll ever see. And then his career goes into an absolute tailspin from there.
Yeah.
So like it's, and Bakram, like we said, is such a wild card and like he could beat anyone in this division. Bakram Zhu is just willing to step in there and do it. Zhu gets blown out because he doesn't fight from distance. He just had a horrible game plan, but you know, who's to say Bakram doesn't do that to everyone in there just because stylistically. So long story short, Zhu could be right at the top.
Yeah, or maybe Murtazaliyev only looked that good because of the matchup with Zhu. Maybe that guy, you know, because he never looked like that before. So maybe that's not really him. And maybe that was a bit of not a fluke in terms of, you know, he got lucky, but a fluke that just the styles matched up in a way that really aided Murtazaliyev. Yeah. Maybe he's not that guy. Maybe he's not that dark horse that he looks to be in the division right now. So, dude, so many questions. So many questions. That's why this weight class is so great, because even if you drop just below the top guys, there's still so many intriguing questions and matchups, and styles make fights. So many different styles are in the top of that division. I mean, it's one of those divisions where I don't think there's going to be someone who comes out on top who beat everybody. I think everyone's going to lose. I think the way they match up, I think all the fights, it's going to be great. It's going to be just melee of just constant fighting each other and some guys winning, some guys losing. I don't think there's going to be one guy who's just going to be able to beat everybody.
Well, before Charlo took over, that's what 154 was for like 5 years. Remember, it was Jared Hurd. It was Julian Williams. It was Lara. It was knocking each other off. There was amazing parity. And I remember posing that question at the time. Was like, would you rather see parity in a division, or would you rather see one ruler, you know, like a Mayweather or a Canelo, where everyone's gunning for that one guy? And I think it's good to see some parity in some divisions. Like 126 right now is my favorite division in boxing.
Yeah,
154 is probably number two, and those two divisions have a lot of parity, and they have a lot of, like, you could make the case for the five guys knocking each other off, or top four knocking each other off, and I think that's what we're seeing. At 154, I'll put you on the spot right now. I tried to put together a list right now of rank the top five at 154 right now.
I got Virgil Ortiz at the top.
So me too.
He's my number one. Number two, I'm going Murtazaliyev because I did see the fight before. Right before he fought Zhu. Do you remember that?
Lounge.
I'm at a cigar lounge and I'm randomly on the TV and I'm watching him and I'm like, oh man, this guy's a nightmare. And I said that I texted Paulie Malignaggi, my partner. And I'm like, yeah, Zhu's gonna have a lot of trouble with this guy. This style is very difficult to deal with. So I actually do think Murtazaliyev is that guy. So
I got him
number
two.
Yep. Number three. Where am I at? Number three.
Tall guy.
Three. No, I'm going Madrimov. I think Madrimov beats. I think Majerov beats Fandora. I got Fandora number four. Number five.
I have Boachuk five.
Boachuk.
I have him five.
Nah, dude, I got Boachuk four, and I got Fandora five.
We have the same five, but mine's a little different. I had Ortiz, Bakram, Fandora, Majerov, Boachuk. It's just like pick your poison. It's like pick what you think. Like, we've seen Ortiz beat Majerov. We've seen Fandora, he beat Zhu. Zhu's not in my top five. We've seen Bakram beat Zhu, but we don't know enough about him. Like you said, like, could Zhu have just been a bad stylistic matchup? I need to see Murtazalev in the ring. I know it's not easy because he doesn't have the biggest promoter. I think he has a belt, though. He has currency.
He has a belt.
He's got currency. Like, and if someone wants to unify, then that's the fight.
Yeah,
that's
for him.
I like that. I like that division. I like that top five. And then you have like Conwell. Jesus Ramos is on a run right now. Who else are we missing? You got Zoo in the mix. Zoo. Thurman in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, it's a very fun division. And after the fight, going back to Thurman, Zoo mentions Keith Thurman's name in the ring. That he did his part there, one half of it. Thurman responds from undisclosed sunny balcony. Could be Australia, could be Florida. And he says, I'll sign that contract tonight. But then he also did an interview with Boxing Scene and said, my next fight has to be a title fight, says Thurman, or at least a title eliminator. Thurman Zhu isn't a title eliminator by definition. Isn't an eliminator of who's going to move on in the public mind and like what we think of a fighter. Yeah, it's a money fight. And Thurman said, I'll also go to Australia. I mean, there's a reason why Keith Thurman was fighting in Australia. Like, let's be real here. They were setting up the Zhu fight, and we know from PBC, when they have an idea, they stick with it, and it's revived again, and now it makes sense.
And they will come back around if it doesn't pan out the way they exactly think, and they'll come back around years later even. I think the winner of that fight, a Zhu Thurman fight, will likely get a title shot because
with Fandora.
But most likely. And so, you know, Thurman's demands are not crazy at all. Now, I want a title fight or a title eliminator. I mean, you know, they can figure out a way to make that a title eliminator. But regardless, I think the winner of that gets a title shot straight away.
Finagle that. Finagle Thurman into a WBA will do it. Because like I think at 154, you also have Charlo looming. He says he's coming back. He was the undisputed champion at 154. He never lost his belts in the ring. He went up to 168 to challenge Canelo, and also how that went. He's with PBC. Thurman's with PBC. Fandora is with PBC. If Fandora is going to fight Zayas, which I've been hearing that, you know, that's looking more and more likely for June. Maybe June would be kind of early, but around that time frame. So Fandora's second fight of 2025 is going to be a bigger one. And it's going to be a PBC in-house fight. And they're going to look at Charlo. They're going to look at Zhu, and they're going to look at Thurman. And if Zhu and Thurman fight in the meantime, we'll have a clearer picture of who that will be. And put Charlo, I would not be shocked if it's Fandora Charlo. I also wouldn't be shocked if it's Fandora versus the Thurman Zhu winner, just to keep it all PBC. And it would be a title fight. The WBO belt might not be on the line because they are willing to strip Fandora. WBC belt will be there.
I'm not sure Charlo makes it back down to 54, but if he can, it's going to be Fandora Charlo. It's just too easy of a fight to make.
You think that's bigger than Thurman?
I just think that timeline wise, it's more realistic. And I think that you're going to have a passing of the guard at some point. So Charlo has to come back into the mix because he was the undisputed. He left for a while. Now he's back. His belts all got dispersed. To get lineal, you need to beat that guy. So I think it makes a lot of sense for him to come back into the mix and go right after the guy who has two belts. Because listen, not for nothing, are we saying that Charlo can't beat Fandora? It's very possible he might.
Talk about another wild card. Is like, I haven't seen him. I haven't seen him in years.
Haven't seen him in years. We saw him at 68 against Canelo. He was overmatched, didn't really try. You know, he was kind of counting the money before the fight was over.
Dropped.
Listen, the guy comes back to 54. He was super talented. He's a super talent. So does he still got it? If he does, he probably beats Fandora. And then he's got two belts again.
Forgot to list Erickson Lubin is fighting Ardriel Holmes. Is that on Pro Box?
That is on Pro Box. Yep.
They had a they had a big beef. That's an IBF eliminator, and then
got to interview the two of them. They were jibber jarring back and forth. Man, there's no love lost between those two. And Ardriel Holmes, man, he's a tricky guy. That's an interesting fight.
I called a bunch of his fights. He was signed to Dabella.
Yeah.
I did some Detroit fights with him.
Cool guy. I like Ardriel.
Yeah, Yoenis Teles as well at 154. He's a name.
Stud.
I think he rounds out the top 10. Great division. Is Zhu back? Yes, he is. In terms of he will be in a big fight next, we will see. We will see how he looks in this fight. He can easily rise to the top of this list. He could get knocked out.
I thought he was going to be the guy last year. I really did. I was really stunned.
After that Mendoza fight, I was like, damn, this guy is good.
Mendoza gives everyone like a hard time. Obviously knocked out Fandora, and Zhu handled him. That was super impressive.
Did you see? I don't know if you saw this. Zhu did an interview in the locker room with I don't know who it was, but they were like looking at the fight footage from the knockout of Spencer, and the guy was like, "What were you thinking here?" It was the last combination to end the fight.
The Benavidez video?
Yeah, that was so cool.
Yeah, I did see that. That was very cool.
Because Zhu was like, well, I was watching Benavidez highlights, I think before the fight. Like, I don't know if in the locker room or like that morning of that one clip. Who was it against where he just unloads? Was it Medina?
Porky Medina.
Yeah, he lands like a 15-punch combination. Yeah. And if you go back and look at Zhu's finish, it was not 15 punches. It wasn't as clean as Benavidez's one. I don't think we'll ever see a combinations that clean again. But that was so cool to see. Like someone like Zhu, you know, giving props to a current guy. And it made me remember when I was up doing the Benavidez Morel fight. I was up in the broadcast position with Amazon, and Zhu came onto the set, and you know, he was business watching Benavidez, and he was telling me how much that's his favorite fighter right now, and he's a beast. And
he's a real fan of the sport and a student of the game.
I love when fighters compliment each other or willing to say, I watch this guy, I love this guy. Because a lot of times it's like some fighters don't give any other fighters props. Like if you go and look at some of the most popular videos I did with Canelo is when he's listing other fighters that he likes and likes to watch. Like, that's cool to me.
Yeah, I got a quick story for our guy Sean Porter, who we were talking about earlier in the show. He came to my camp when I was training for Ruslan. And him and his dad, like, they came to watch me spar. And they talked about, you know, they had sparred Ruslan a couple of years back at Wild Card. And like, Sean was just saying, man, he's like, hey, I like what you're all about. And I was like, oh, cool, man. He's like, have you been paying attention? He's like, yeah, no, I've been watching you. And it's like, I was like, hey, man, I'm a big fan of yours too. He's like, yeah, man. He's like, nobody wants to admit it. He's like, we're all fans of each other. Like, and it was like such a cool, like, down to earth and real moment from Sean and his dad. And Sean and I have been friends ever since. That was, you know, 10, 12
Well,
years ago.
You guys were kind of in the same division.
Yeah, kind of.
I get it.
I was never really a real 47 pounder. So, because that was at 40. And then I got dragged up by Pacquiao. And then I stayed there for the Khan fight. But then got dragged into the Spence fight. And then went back down. Because I was never a 47 pounder. But I made so much money up there. It was really tough to say no to all that when, even though I probably should have for my.
Yeah, but there was nothing at 140.
Titles. No. It was titles, though. It was titles for me to get.
I really wish
I would have got another shot at the title.
Spence, Khan, Pacquiao. How do you – you can't turn that down.
Nah, it's tons. It's tons. It's
140, tons. Maybe you could have.
But then when I came back, you know, I had the opportunity for, like, Maurice Hooker and J.C. Ramirez.
Yes,
like,
I remember the Hooker fight.
Postal. Those are the fights that, like, I wanted to get back into, and I just the pandemic killed me.
Hooker, man, he was a flash in the pan.
Yeah, that was my shot. That was my shot. That was going to be the fight.
Now you're a podcaster.
Yeah, now I'm a podcaster.
No, you're doing well.
Now I wear media credentials. Oh, man.
That's fine. Nothing wrong with that, my friend.
I like what I do. Don't get me wrong.
154, fun division. Let's move on to some of the other fights this past weekend. We saw Richard Torres pick up a majority decision, or was a decision?
It was UD. I think he was wide. Yeah, it was wide.
Won some money on that one. If you guys took our advice last episode where we liked Torres by decision, I was so close to making Torres decision Zhu TKO parlay, which was like plus 500, whatever. Oof. I know. I can't be greedy.
We won. Dude, you should have done that.
I know.
Damn, buddy. Come
but
on.
But we still
buddy.
Won. Still won. Torres' decision dropped down to the plus 215. It was at the plus 250, probably from our advice. That's how influential we are in this game, Chris. We say, hey, we like Torres by decision. Next thing you know, you go to the books and the market is going down just like the stocks right now.
Well, people, they run to that. The bookies as soon as they listen to our episode.
I would not be shocked.
I know a lot of people who do that.
They call us the Line Moving Podcast. That's right. But Richard Torres wins.
That's a t-shirt.
Line movers, baby. not a great fight. This was a lot of clinching. If you didn't catch it live and you watched the Top Rank YouTube highlights, kudos to that editor because he made it look like Ollie Frazier. Because this fight was awful. I mean, there was a lot of holding. There was a lot of hugging. There was a lot of bad cardio. Torres gets the win. Things picked up towards 8th, 9th, 10th round. It got a little bit cleaner, and there was some better combinations. I thought Torres landed some nice, crafty shots. The good and the bad I put together, Chris. And let's see if you agree with this. The good, beat a solid, tall, big, heavyweight Richard Torres.
And a guy who had a good momentum. Vianello's looked very good. Yep.
Landed some crafty hooks. Stunned Vianello late. So his power carries late, we learned about Richard Torres. The bad, cardio wasn't there. You know, midway through the fight, he's huffing and puffing, and that's, you know, as a smaller heavyweight, your thing's got to be cardio. You got to be Usyk in there. You got to be a machine.
Gas tank's got to be there.
You got to be able to outwork these monsters that you're fighting. Also, he just walks into a lot of shots, which is going to be a problem. He has a good chin so far, but, you know, Vianello is not a huge puncher, or he's a decent puncher. He's not really known for power. So the good, the bad, the ugly from Torres, but he passed. He passes his test, and he survives in advance. He moves on.
First time going past 8 rounds, too, by the way. So, and with a guy who was live. So, in terms of the gas tank, you know, that was the first time we ever saw round 9, round 10. So, there's that. So, that if you're going to knock him. But, yeah, you know, I like the idea of his ability to fight a taller heavyweight. Because if there's anything that, you know, Torres is going to have to be good at, it's fighting tall heavyweights who can punch, who are punching from a down position. And Vianello could crack with that right hand. So, I was impressed. I was impressed that he was able to keep it so wide, make it so wide, because Vianello has been looking really good lately, and the guy can crack at that right hand a little bit. So, good win. Not the prettiest win, but the way Torres fights isn't pretty anyway. He's not going to get pretty wins against these guys. He's a grinder. But I agree with you on the gas tank thing. That cannot be an issue moving forward, because if he's tired with these guys late, heavyweights punch hard late. And if one of those guys can find his chin late in a fight when he's tired, that's all she wrote, bro.
Well, that's what I kind of feel like we're talking about his plateau. Everyone's talking about how far can this guy go? He's an American heavyweight that means something still, despite American heavyweight. I think it's at its all-time lowest right now. Maybe close was like during the Klitschko era. There's just no American heavyweights right now. Jared Anderson, we know about him. He gone. Richard Torres is a cruiserweight. I mean, there's talks about should this guy go down to cruiserweight. There's talks about can he beat some of these bigger heavyweights. There's talks can his chin hold up. Like, there's a lot of like what ifs around Torres. Like, what do you see? Like, what do you see as his like potential? What do you see as his peak?
Listen, you're not pulling 30 pounds off that kid to make a cruiserweight. So let's put that one out. Throw that out. He's a heavyweight and he's a small heavyweight. He's a fun heavyweight. He'll never be heavyweight champ. Sorry, guys. I'm sorry for the Torres fans out there.
Bridgerweight?
Who cares? You know, there's no money. There's no money there.
Bridgerweight
no
never took off, thank God. I hated Bridgerweight when they announced that.
But listen, if you even think about Torres' his amateur career, like he was the American Rocky guy. You know, like he was just like, oh man, you love him because he's an underdog and he works really hard and he's a grinder and he's an effort guy. He's also got a great personality and he's a good looking kid and he's got all that going around him as well. But in terms of where he falls competitively with a heavyweight division that's actually really good right now, I don't see him near the top.
Well, what are they going to do then? Like, he's not like a novelty act. He's going to
try, dude. He's going to be a contender. That's it. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong. Listen, we're talking about what was the old movie? I could have been a contender. Yeah. Being a contender is not a bad thing.
Like, make some money.
Getting to that level, dude. Getting to the chance of getting a title shot. That's a big deal.
Huge. Very. That's an accomplishment.
And he'll make a lot of money at heavyweight.
Yeah. I'm not trying to
fight for a world title at heavyweight. You're making money. So he's got a good little career ahead of him.
What about Richard Torres versus Jared Anderson?
I mean, top ranked.
Top ranked do that?
Make that fight tomorrow. I mean, listen, there's no love lost between Jared and Top Rank. That would be a way for Top Rank to get rid of Jared altogether, you know, if they think Torres is going to beat him. So, and in recent form, yeah, I think a lot of people would pick Torres because Jared didn't look good in his last fight either.
Denir Pero, who is headlining MVP 11, which I'll be on the call of May 9th from the Carib Royale on live on DAZN, is he's called out Torres by name. He's like 6-0 Cuban, or maybe even more than that, 10-0. He's got heavy, heavy hands, trained by Bob Santos.
Like Bob.
I don't know if Torres would go there. I don't know if Top Rank would go there with him. But you're right. He's got, like, Torres has been on ESPN a lot. I wouldn't say he has the full, like, marketing machine behind him. He does a lot of it himself. Like, people know who he is because of he's a heavyweight and he's American and all the reasons that you just listed. I don't know. Maybe he waits it out. Like, he does have youth on his side, and maybe he, like, we see where the heavyweight division's going. Like, the Giants are starting to fall, whether they're retiring or whether they're just, you know, losing or both. You know, Joshua's not around for long. Fury has one fight left. Dubois is looked at as the heir apparent, right? Or Parker, which we don't ever, he is 32, Parker. He can stick around for like 3 or 4 years. Parker's not huge. I don't think Torres can beat Joseph Parker. I don't think he beat Daniel Dubois. Moses Atuma, Fabio Wardley is fighting Big Baby. I have to study like this new wave. Like I know the names, but I haven't like really hunkered down. And I don't know where Torres.
We've been so focused on the top guys because they've actually been fighting for the past 18 months to 2 years. True. So the next wave is coming up, and you know we're in a transitionary phase of the heavyweight division. There's no question.
I will say this about Torres: he definitely presents a different look. If he's got that, he's got a uniqueness in his style that I don't know how far that can take you. I don't know if that can keep you in fights. I don't know if that can make you a champion. But there, he has a style that's a lot different than a lot of the other heavyweights out there. And if he can hone in on it, and he could maybe make some noise. But the jury's still out for him. Abdullah Mason gets a win over Ornelas, fifth round stoppage. Ornelas came into this a little tough. I would say it was a decent opponent for Mason. Mason does what he did, like you know, ho hum knockout for Mason. And this was another chance to him just get out there and. You know, he talked afterwards. Bob Arum told him, "You're the future face of boxing," and Mason is running with that. Your dog agrees.
Yeah. My dog loves Abdullah. We do too. You know, he's a tremendous talent. He is. I mean, there's a reason he's the prospect of the year. You know, no question about it. So,
did you watch the Lindolfo Delgado fight?
With Elvis Rodriguez.
Yeah,
I did. And,
good fight.
Good fight. Elvis overperformed in my opinion because I think Delgado's pretty good. He's tough. He's mean. I've called a lot of his fights. I've called some of Elvis's fights. I did not think Elvis looked good when he fought in the undercard of Teofimo Lopez versus Claggett. He got rocked and hurt bad by a pretty nondescript Filipino fighter and fought pretty cautiously, protecting his chin all night. So I was definitely leaning Delgado by being more dominant, but Elvis showed why he was such a top prospect early on. Like, the guy's got a lot of talent and Freddie loves him, so he went out there and he performed well. He made it very, very close, but the right guy won.
They're only separated by 5 total connects. It was that close of a fight. It was the closest fight odds wise of the weekend, and it turned out being
the Combi Box guys were working hard on that for that one.
We were, Combi Box, I mean, all hands on deck this weekend. We had your fight, Pro Box. Mm-hmm. We counted 3 of the Australia fights, the Zoo fight card. There was the, what was the other one? There was the, it was a third. I don't know. There's a lot of fingers on deck on Saturday night.
Are the guys with fingers on ice today? Like everybody's just.
Wasn't
like,
me. I haven't done it in a while.
I don't know, but all the guys.
They're probably resting right now, doing their exercises and keeping those fingers ready to go.
They're at the physical therapist getting their fingers ready for the next show.
That's how it works, man. It's just, some of these, like the last, I would say, 10-ish years, boxing with more streaming and like more like of these networks kind of going their separate ways, putting on their own fights. We're getting these like 3-4 fight cards in one day. And mm-hmm. I'm sure it's not on the minds of all boxing fans, the inner workings of CompuBox and like how we go about staffing everyone.
And it might not be on the minds of any boxing fans. Just sorry to burst your bubble.
Right. Like you see the numbers and you're like, oh, it is a number. And then you just go on. But behind those numbers is a man, Bob Canobio. And that man has to schedule everyone and figure out the different time zones and get everyone on page on the same page and ready to go for to count their punches.
Bob is very good at that, man. He's very organized. That's what he lives for. Very organized. Very, very organized.
He already sent me this morning. He sends me Boots Ennis Stanionis CompuBox preview. You know, and we're doing that later in the week. But you know, he's ready to go with some stats, and can't wait for that fight. That's this weekend. It came up pretty quick. Yeah, but at 140, I don't know. This was like labeled an eliminator, like Delgado. I don't think fans know much about him. He is solid. Elvis, I think, will stick around. Like I didn't even know he was with Top Rank. I know Top Rank caught him.
No, he came
PBC,
back. Yeah,
and Top Rank got him back. Like he should stick around. He should get fights. I mean, he was right in that fight, and it was a really good fight, and he almost dropped him towards the end. But
that's what I mean. I think he put himself back into the mix. You know, show that he belongs at this high level. Like, yeah, he caught a loss, but he lost to a guy who's right there, you know, and has been waiting for a while. And I was worried that Landolfo Delgado was the kind of guy who was going to get stale because he wasn't getting his shot. But I mean, Elvis still has some really good wins on his record. You know, he stopped Victor Postol. You know, he beat Joseph Adorno. And Joseph Adorno was a dangerous guy, and he beat him when he only had one loss. Didn't look good in his last two fights against Kendo Castaneda or the Gino Rodrigo was the Filipino fighter I was talking about that he
great names
look good against. Yeah, great names.
Great pronunciation by you.
Oh, thank you.
You really are a media guy.
Oh man, that's true. It's true.
Because the worst thing, I mean, number one thing as a broadcaster is pronounce the names correctly.
Yeah, it's one of the most difficult things that we do, especially in the heat of the moment. Some of those names get real tough.
You got to study the night. Like I always like not
because people don't understand how much you have to study before to call a fight.
Bro, I know. It's like, oh, you're going to right. You're going to Orlando again. You're going to chill by the pool. Oh, I'm like, yeah, I'll be by the pool, but I would be like watching. The process is watching past five fights. You know, just getting as much information, talking to the fighters, walking around. I mean, it is fun. I'm not going to lie. Like, this is a great job, but like, it's a lot of work. And you guys do a ton of shows too.
Yeah, I mean, I need to know everything that's going on in the sport. Also, for this, of course, but also calling fights. I call a ton of fights on a bunch of different networks. So, yeah, it's a lot of work. And people think like how we always talk about like people are like, oh, you guys are going to have so much fun in Vegas. Like, dude, we work nonstop. Those Vegas trips take years off our lives. Like literally.
If I made a vlog, it wouldn't even be super entertaining because a lot of it would be me sitting in the media center at like 8 p.m.
with your eyes like bloodshot.
Bloodshot, telling our editor, no, change that. And then going out to dinner and having fun. Like it is fun, but there, yeah, it's a grind. As like any job, it just happens to be, you know, in the boxing world.
Our work is fun, but it's still work.
That's right. Last fight, we'll talk quickly. Hrgović versus Joyce.
Slop fest.
Felt a little dirty after watching that. Hrgović, I mean, this guy, talk about like with Zoo, what we've seen with Zoo in the last year, his, you know, stock falling and then rising. Hrgović going, he got the win, like, but he didn't look outstanding. He should have got Joyce out of there. So Joyce is talking about, I'll continue to fight after this. Like, I still have my wits about me. Like, bro, no, you don't. Like, it was just like a heavyweight fight where I don't see either guy like competing at the top level. They can just do this. They can just recycle these names, Dillian White, Joyce, Hrgović, and just do that for like three more years.
Hrgović showed what he was in his last fight with Dubois.
Bully.
He's a front running bully. And if you give him resistance, you know, you can get him off his game plan. If you can take his punch, he's gonna wilt. Yeah, he just will not be one of those guys. And it's funny, like you said, the fall from grace, because a couple years ago, before that Dubois fight, even though he wasn't active, he was like, oh, this guy's really dangerous. I thought so too. I was like, I was high on Hrgović. And then at Dubois fight, he crumbled. He wilted. He gave up. And I just don't ever forget that. I don't forget when guys, quote unquote, quit. He was looking for a way out in that fight.
Silent quitting, they call it.
And then Joe Joyce. All right, listen, guys, fighters. Take a page out of Floyd Mayweather's handbook. Don't talk badly about your opponents before you fight them and then look bad against them because it just makes you look that much worse. Dude, yeah, say they're great. Say Joe Joyce.
Hell of a fighter.
He's really
hell of a fighter.
You know, yeah. So when Ergovic goes out there all week long and says that Joe Joyce is punchy, he can't take a punch anymore, he can't talk, he can't do an interview, he shouldn't even be fighting, and then you struggle with him for 10 rounds, that does not make you look good, dude. Marketing-wise, not a good move. So, I don't know. I don't see these guys near the top at all.
He did the same thing to Dubois. He called Dubois he pretty much, it was like, I don't know the exact quote, it was so brutal. He pretty much called Dubois like a kid, a child at the mall.
Yeah,
lost.
Tried to bully him.
And then he ends up getting bullied by Dubois and getting and losing. And then afterwards, Hergovic, despite all that, he calls out Dubois. And he says, I can beat him again. Like, no one is clamoring for Hergovic to get in there. This is a boogeyman at one point. That fight was...
He had that awesome fight with Zhang, and he showed balls in that fight. Yeah. But I thought he actually lost that fight too. So I thought Zhang edged it. But super close fight regardless, but a great performance. And that's when I was like very high on him. I was like, man, that was super impressive. I was impressed by both those guys that night because Zhang wasn't the kind of guy who had a good gas tank and he would falter. But that night he went all the way, the whole route, and looked really good. And they both did. And I was like, you got heavyweights who have gas tanks that are big and can punch? Dangerous guys. But nah, I'm off that train.
Deontay Wilder is coming back. I forgot who he's fighting, but he's calling out some names, says he wants to be undisputed.
Harper, right? Isn't he fighting?
Yeah, Curtis Harper.
Curtis, is that what it is? Yeah.
Yeah. That's what's going on at heavyweight, at the lower levels of the heavyweight division. But lastly, I want to talk about something that happened over on the Twitterverse that has to do with Turkey, it has to do with Saudi, has to do with Shakur Stevenson. So Shakur Stevenson beats Padley, and he's supposed to fight Schofield, and Schofield was not the mandatory forever. Shakur Stevenson's mandatory for the last couple of years has been William Zepeda. They've tried to make that fight. It fell apart numerous times. Zepeda got hurt. Zepeda had a kid. Stevenson moved on, and I don't understand why it hasn't been made. But now we think it's being made until Oscar De La Hoya tweets out that I can't believe Shakur Stevenson pulls out of the Zepeda fight. And that's when Shakur responds, because you know Shakur Twitterson is going to get on Twitter, good, bad, and the ugly. We're going to hear what's on that guy's mind. And he's like, bro, is that what they're telling you? He's like, Turkey gave me a number. He promised me this number for a Zepeda fight. Now he's giving me a lower number, and he's not even telling me himself. He used a derogatory term, Shakur Stevenson, to explain what's going on and who's sending him these messages now of these lower purses. So trouble. Like, this is the first that we're kind of hearing of lowballing. This is the first we're kind of hearing of broken promises from the Saudi group and Turkey and them. Very interesting to see. Long story
short, we're hearing a fighter speak out against their inner workings of, you know, the groups over there. So,
well, Teofimo did as well. He deleted it. Teofimo commented on Instagram about the May 2nd. He goes, this promotion has been shit, with the shit emoji, and then deletes it and then writes, I can't wait to fight May 2nd. This is going to be great. And some guy on Twitter caught it, immediately screenshotted it. So, I mean, this is going to happen. I mean, like, yeah, they are the new shiny toy in boxing, and they have a ton of money. That's Saudi I'm talking about, and it's been all great. Every fighter has nothing bad to say about them, but they saw our promoters.
That's how every new promoter is in the beginning. the fighter's like, oh, the glowing remarks, and then the inner workings happen, then you look at contracts, and it's the nature of the beast.
Yeah, so Shakur says he's not getting the money that he was once promised to fight William Zepeda. Zepeda's been the WBC mandatory for years. He just beat Tevin Farmer. And Shakur says, you know what? Like, I don't need Turkey per se. We could go to purse bid, and anyone could bid on it. And I said, this will be my next fight, says Shakur Stevenson. I will fight William Zepeda next, and I will beat him. This is all coming from Shakur's Twitter, which is a wild ride. But I thought it was pretty interesting to see everything go down like that. And that's what you're going to get with Shakur. Is you can knock him all you want inside the ring. You don't like his fighting style. You don't like that he's constantly on Twitter. But in this case, I was kind of entertained, and I was like, damn, like he's being very transparent with fight fans.
Yeah, you may not like his style, but he always chooses violence on Twitter. So you got to appreciate that. He goes
Twitterson.
He goes to battle on Twitter, and this one is good because a little you get to see, peel back the curtain a little bit, some of the inner workings of what's going on with these deals and how kind of things are moving in the future. But Listen, man, at least he's trying to make that Zepeda fight. I think that's exactly the move he should go. You know, Zepeda looks ripe for Shakur.
Ripe
very for the word. Picking.
Yeah. After that 22 rounds with Farmer, which we spoke about last episode. But yeah, Stevenson versus Zepeda was the fight, and it had so much momentum. Zepeda, I feel like it's just like, I'm assuming this is what it looks like from the outside, and Golden Boy. They're just like biding their time until he has to step in there with Stevenson, because he's been the mandatory forever. And, you know, like, how much can we squeeze out of Zepeda? Let's just do a fight in Saudi with Tevin Farmer. That backfires. Let's do a rematch in Cancun. That doesn't look great. Okay. Well, now we'll fight Stevenson, and we'll lose 10-2, and we'll have to rebuild. So it's like, all right, you're kind of backed into a corner, and Stevenson got his foot on the gas pedal, got his fingers on the keys, tweeting.
Stevenson knows it. He knows how the sport works. He knows the landscape is. Yeah, they pretty much have to do that now. Because listen, I said this on the last show too. If Zepeda goes out there and they try and get him a win, and he looks ordinary with an ordinary opponent, then his price tag goes even down even more. The most money he can get with that Shakur fight is right now. So the issue then, though, if Shakur is going this purse bid route, how much money does that fight really get from other promoters?
Right. That's, it could be even lower than the number. It could be lower than that second number that the derogatory term that he used brought back to him.
Very, very possible.
You're fumbling. You're fumbling bags, and that's another thing. We're going to see it, because with Stevenson, he lets you know what's going on, and now we know a little bit of everything.
Purse bids are open. We know that. We know where the purse
bid. Yeah, we'll see the number. Another thing too, Chris, will the WBC order the purse bid? Like, that's not a given. Like, Mauricio Suleiman, he's notorious for this. He's notorious for not ordering mandatories. He did it with Canelo and his opponents. Like, will he order that? Is it technically going against Turkey? I don't know. We'll see. And then anyone can step in. Like, Matchroom could buy this fight. Golden Boy could buy the fight. Triller can buy the fight. Me and you, Inside Boxing Live Productions, can put a bid in for Stevenson Zepeda. Should we do that?
Yeah, why not?
All right, you're in? All right, cool. Yeah, send me a Venmo me. We'll put in $500.
Inside Boxing Live Promotions.
LLC.
I do have a New York promotional company, so we could.
Yeah, let's put Stevenson Zepeda on in New York.
I don't want to host it in New York, though.
Yeah, man. It's perfect. We'll put a Mexican fighter and a black fighter in New York, where the rates are the highest, the taxes are the highest. Mm-hmm. We'll go bankrupt. We'll have to sell everything, but we can always say we did it. We promoted it. A world championship fight. Listen, can't take that from us.
It's not the craziest thing in the world that we might actually promote a fight one day. It's very possible.
I have ideas, but it's not at the high. It's not no WBC.
No, championships. No. We're not starting a championship level with multi-million-dollar fighters.
I have ideas. I have ideas.
I would like to host an amateur fight.
Exactly. That's my idea.
I would love to do that. I think that'd be really cool. Local grassroots, get these local kids, get a couple PALs together, get kids from all over. South Florida is a great place to do it, though. A lot of gyms down here, a lot of places to fight.
Put our touches on it. We'll be there. You'll be there. Like, you know, my brother Nick has a lot of promoting background. He's interested. That's all we got to talk about. Speaking of the amateur ranks, you're heading to New York City this weekend, because Michael Algieri, the fighting pride of the Algieris, the latest Algieri fighter, is in the championship of the Ringmasters Thursday, Madison Square Garden.
Third year in a row, second weight class. You know, he won the novice division at 125 a couple years ago. Then he won the elite division at 125 last year. And now he's moved up to 132 with the elite division in the finals once again. So he gets this win. It'll be a third title, but Uncle Chris is flying up to work the corner. So big ones on there.
More importantly, yeah,
Dan, you're basically like a quasi Algeria at this point.
That's right. You're damn right. I'm excited to go. More importantly, are we going to Keene's Steakhouse beforehand?
I mean, is there even a question? I just ran 10 miles, dude. Why do you think I did that?
There's not a Keene's. Well, we can go. Yeah, let me know what time, because we got to get a reservation. But not the first time we've been to Keene's while it's still light out. Like it's a dungeon in there, but it's amazing.
Keene's lunch is the way to go. Dude, at the bar? That's the way to do it. Oh, yeah. Keene's lunch at the bar. Just get in there. I get my wedge salad. I get my martini. I get my rare steak.
Boom. Oh, man.
That's all I need. It's a perfect lunch.
Yeah, so Chris is coming to the city. We'll link up then. We'll put out another episode later in the week for Boots Ennis versus Stanionis, which is
love it.
I wouldn't say it's a huge fight, but it's the first meaningful fight since Beterbiev Bivol. It's a unification fight, so we'll have a full preview betting analysis.
It's not even just meaningful; it's actually a good fight. Like if it was, no, if there were no titles, if there were no titles on the line, it's a good fight. And then, yeah, this, but there are titles on the line, so it has a it holds a lot of weight.
And it's in Atlantic City, Boardwalk Hall.
You going?
No.
I mean, I like AC.
I know. In theory, it sounds great, but that actually me getting in my car, driving 2.5-3 hours, and then arriving in AC, that's your prize for that. The prize for the 3-hour drive is Atlantic City.
That's pretty funny.
And you're like, shit.
If people don't know what Atlantic City is like, I won't tell you. You got to figure it out. You got this because you can't describe it in words.
First timers will probably love it. Like, yeah. I've been going since I was legitimately 5 years old, and it's still fun, but it's also still Atlantic City. And you're like, is this worth it? I'd rather be home.
Do I want to fly up and we make a road trip?
I mean, obviously, I'll be in if you do that, but
That might be fun if we get some good vlogging. That's for sure.
Well, Matchroom, hook us up. I'll be in there. I'll be in there. Good graces.
Yeah,
Rooney?
I'm sure we'd be fine getting in there.
Kevin Rooney, give us tickets. Yeah, I mean, AC's awesome.
Media pass. Get us some
media
pass.
Dude, Boardwalk Hall, I mean, what have they been doing? Like, are the lights going to work if they turn them on?
Dude, the dust that must be in that place. There's been nothing going on.
Nothing. Like, not even like a Miss America pageant. They took that out of Atlantic City. Like, there's no concerts at Boardwalk Hall.
So I was in Philly this past weekend, obviously, for the Pro Box TV fights. And I stopped into the show Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Are you familiar with it?
Yeah, amazing.
Good show. Good show, you know, obviously Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which is hilarious because the sun did not show itself at all.
No, East Coast, we're going through it over here. It's raining every day.
I stopped in Max Bar, one of the
infamous bars
on the show. And I'm like, and I didn't know about this. I didn't know that was a thing. So I go in there, I go to the barkeep and I'm like, hey man, like, is like this Always Sunny? Like, is that related to this? And he goes, yeah. He's like, the guy Mac owns it. He's like, or whatever his name is. And I was like, oh, and he's telling me these great stories about how they've come in there and like hung out and like, they're all really cool. And he also said that they're not acting. Those characters are exactly.
Yeah, they're all friends.
Exactly,
I think that's the closest. That's the closest show to Seinfeld.
It's a great, I mean, it's definitely darker than Seinfeld, but
but they derived it. They're huge fans of Seinfeld and it's a kind of a show about nothing, but there's a lot of improv. There's a lot of their friends.
So the reason I brought this up, the bartender said he lived in AC for a while and he was talking about the downfall of AC and like the casinos that closed, the Revel. And I was like, oh man, I'm like, this guy really knows it. So
yeah, it's bad, man. I mean, the last time I was there was maybe 3 years ago. It was PFL was doing a lot of cards at Ocean Resort.
They were. Yeah, Oceans, yeah.
But that's not Atlantic City to me. Like you're so secluded. Nah. You're way off at the other end.
If you can't walk outside and dodge a crackhead to get to the next
dodge a crackhead, get a splinter on your foot at the boardwalk, get accosted, try to buy a t-shirt, get almost hit by the tram car. Like Tropicana is Atlantic City to me.
Yep, step over a pool of human urine. If you're not dealing with that, then you're not in AC.
Everyone who's going to AC this week can have a great time. With that being said, I hope you enjoy
it. For those first-timers out there.
There's going to be a lot of first-timers. Like, it's hilarious to think of some people traveling for that. Any Stanionis fans that are like, hey, Lithuanians, that are like, we're in America.
Oh, America sucks.
Yeah. Boots fans, they know plenty about it. Those are Philly people.
They know about it.
They've made that trip numerous times. All right. So we'll see you later on in the week. Chris, I'll see you in New York City. We'll meet at Keene's Steakhouse. Have a time. Enjoy it. Protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs.